This Week in Nature is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for your free 30 days trial at audibletrial.com/TWIA for your free audiobook.
Hi, welcome to This Week in Asia, episode 118. Tonight, our two usual other hosts are not around. Daniel is currently on TED Global. Wow, he actually did a small presentation recently. And I think Smitty is traveling somewhere in the US. So tonight, I have two guests. Well, the host is me, Bernard Leong. And so I have two very interesting guests. The first person I probably want to talk to has recently done a big event, the big event that defines Southeast Asia, and that is our dear Mohan Balani from E27. Hi, Mohan.
Hey, Bernard.
Yeah, sorry, not just Southeast Asia, it should be Pan-Asia, because you have people from East Asia coming in as well.
Yeah, large number of people from Japan this year.
Yes, yes, yes. So what happens after Echelon then?
Oh, okay, we've been... So internally, we've been very busy, you know, with all the follow-ups. Actually, more interestingly, I want to talk about the exposure to startups. A lot of the startups got So there was some very good media exposure from CNET, from Digital Life, and even from the Next Web. So it's nice to see, you know, all these large medias looking at Echelon as the event for Asian startups. And interestingly, we've got word that quite a few of them, I won't mention names yet because a lot of these are still in discussion, but quite a few of them have actually been in like serious late-stage negotiations with a lot of the angels and investors who were at the events. So I've already heard probably of commits being made and, you know, term sheets slowly being signed. So it's a very positive sign. We're going to see quite a few companies actually raising funding through the event. Okay, so that's very good for us.
Awesome.
And yeah, now we're looking at, you know, what are the next steps for the company, and yeah, we'll definitely talk about that soon once we have some details firmed up.
You're gonna have more of those events that are similar to your satellite events, right? That's been ongoing.
Yeah, I guess the satellite has always been a very popular draw because that's, you know, for those that want to get an early flavor to Echelon and they want to have a local Echelon kind of feel in their countries. You know, that's always the best thing for them. And I think, you know, we Thailand actually, you know, there was actually a huge number of people from Thailand. And so, you know, we'll probably be having a Thai satellite and maybe even an Australian satellite in the next one. So that's, you know, it is good to see that it's expanding in new places.
Okay. So my other guest is actually Jeremy Snyder from The Sharing Engine. Yep.
Hey, Bernard.
Yep. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Glad to be on the show. Thanks.
I thought the last show you did a pretty good job having a very, very vibrant discussion with Smitty.
Well, Smitty and also Sawmill, I think, yeah, you know, that was a good fun.
Yeah, I thought you guys had a very good, vibrant discussion on China, so I thought maybe we should get you back onto the show maybe tonight. So I guess I think the first big event that I'm gonna go backwards a bit, before I talk about the big event that happened today, will be the Microsoft Surface last week. So Microsoft ended up unveiling two things last week was that we talked about with Serkan and myself and Daniel, and we said that if they don't unveil something mega big, it's gonna kick their butts, basically. So they unveiled Microsoft Surface on Monday and then Microsoft Windows Phone 8 on Wednesday. So I guess the first question I probably want to sort of open it up, what do you all think about it? And I guess the question is, how does it impact Asia on the whole? Yeah, maybe we can start with Mohan.
I think Surface is just Microsoft's way of you know, trying to see like they're in the game. It's ironic how, you know, I still remember the big tablet computer thing that Microsoft had many years ago and how they never really went anywhere. Yeah, many years ago they really started the whole tablet scene, right? Back in the days of Bill Gates, and then they had the table Surface thing that, you know, never really went anywhere as well. So I guess on one hand they're trying to be relevant, but on the other hand, you know, they probably seem like they're a bit too late in the game to really make a strong impact. So I guess it'll all depend on how well developers support the new platform. I heard about some, you know, cross compatibility issues that apps are going to face. We had a chat with a close friend from Microsoft recently, and he was mentioning that all the new apps will not be backward compatible and stuff like that. So I don't know, man. You know, they seem to be wanting to push in the right direction, but at the same time, I just hope they don't step on the toes of their existing OEMs and partners and all that.
Mm. Do you think that will have an impact to the OEM partners then? Like, for example, all the like the Taiwanese manufacturers like Asus, HTCs, or even like Korea, like Samsung's, you know? Do you think that there's a kick for these Asian OEMs?
When Google launched the Nexus phone, like, a lot of the talk was on how Google was going to piss off HTC and Samsung and all these other Android makers. But that, in the end, you know, really didn't happen. So, because I think consumers were still gravitating towards the HTCs and the Samsungs. So, I think people might think that, you know, the OEMs are going to get pissed. But at the end of the day, I think the consumers are going to choose the company that has got the better entrenchment in building tablets and building a better user experience. So, I don't really think that much of that, much is going to happen in that space, actually.
Okay.
But well, I think that's where the real interesting thing is, though, right, is around the who are the OEMs who have skills in building tablets, right?
Yeah.
You know, the thing about Surface that's a little bit different than, let's say, the iPad is Surface, in my opinion, is clearly aimed at being a transition away from PCs or a transition away from laptop PCs in particular, right? So if you start to see that the Surface tablet really does cut into the overall laptop PC market, then I think the competition among the OEMs gets really, really fierce. Right, because you have some makers like, you know, as you mentioned, Asus and even let's say an Acer or an HTC, who probably do have the capabilities, but then you've got a lot of second tier PC OEMs who probably would struggle if they had to really compete in the tablet space. Mm-hmm. So the impact could be, you know, it could mean a loss. It could be in an overall dip in the amount of PCs being manufactured overall. Or you could see somebody like an Acer drop their laptop PC line if Surface works out.
Yeah, I mean, the general trend on PCs is already like, it has been dropping since the last few years anyway. But right. What I really like that they've done with Surface is they're really unifying their entire, you know, that whole touch panel-based UI. And that's really, you know, we're really starting to see Microsoft unifying their user experience and making their whole experience across the PC, mobile, and tablets, like, you know, really unified, which is a very positive direction.
Mm. You think that you're referring to the Metro UI, I presume?
Yeah.
I think they showcase a part of it during the Echelon, right?
For the I think they did some of that at the booth.
Yeah, so actually the I actually experimented with the UI. It's really quite intuitive, and I guess the news reader, all that the it feels very different from Android, because Android is taking a lot off the iOS. So but the question is whether consumer adoption. But there was this argument that it was meant for the enterprise market. I guess, what do you all think? That do you think that Microsoft is building this tablet PC strictly, really, that they're going after their enterprise clients? I guess the adoption is going to be quite tough because most of them are still at Windows 7 and not in Windows 8.
But, you know, I don't know if they're going after it immediately, but look, I mean, the very first version of the Xbox was pretty good, but not amazing, right? It didn't win over the video game industry, but their second release was pretty amazing. The 360 was fantastic and is now a mainstay in a lot of living rooms, right? So I think, you know, if you look at what the very first version of Surface is, it may not really hit the mark all across the board, but look at two things, right? So one is that the enterprise market is where Microsoft still has the greatest saturation, and second is the enterprise market is where iPad has the lowest saturation. So if I'm Microsoft, I'm looking at this and thinking, okay, well, I'll do one release, I'll improve, I'll build on that, I'll do a second release of Surface, and I've got to get in and test the enterprise market early, because with the second release of Surface, that's when I have to make sure I maintain my stronghold over that enterprise market. Mm.
Yeah, and to touch upon that, I think from a strategic positioning perspective, I think that's pretty smart as well, because you don't want to, like, you know, completely position Surface as a consumer device, because then you're going to go head on with Samsung's and even Apple's iPad and everything. So like, there really isn't a clear defining leader in the enterprise market, maybe other than Lenovo that's been trying to push their tablets. So I think Microsoft also took the right route, like, considering they have a strong, you know, enterprise package on their side.
Right. Yeah. So I'm going to switch gear a little bit to the event that happened. Well, technically they are yesterday, but it's out today, is the Google I.O. event. So they released the Nexus 7, basically, today. And I guess Android. It reminds me a lot like the Amazon Kindle Fire. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Do you all see the announcements? I think they made three big announcements. One was Google Glasses.
Yeah, and I saw that video.
Yeah, and they're going to allow developers to buy at $1,500. I'm going to put it on my shopping cart for next year, so I'm getting it. Then there was the Nexus Q, which is kind of like an Apple TV, mm-hmm. but priced $200 more, but it has a very interesting engineering backstory behind it that was also covered by Wired. I've read about it. The third one is the Nexus 7, which is the Asus tablet that was launched. In fact, the chairman of Asus was there with Andy Rudin, you know, when they make the announcement. And that particular device is a 7-inch tablet running on the Tegra chipset, which is the sort of like the best of the lot now.
Right. Okay.
So I guess the perspective from just looking at the Google I/O event, I mean, it was one week back to back, right?
Yep.
Taking just now those thoughts that you have from Microsoft, do you think they are a little bit too late, and where do you think Google is now in terms of that towards the Asia market?
Well, that's tough. I mean, I think one of the issues is a lot of these products aren't really sold direct in Asia anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So the first two versions of the Google Android phones, the ones that were actually Google branded and not, you know, HTC or Samsung branded, did they even go on sale?
Yes, yeah, they did.
But a year after original release, right? Months?
I actually managed to buy the first Nexus One through Google webpage. Just immediately, okay. 1 month after it released.
Okay,
it
one month
open
later.
Actually, it was immediately opened. I just waited for 1 month to buy it because some of my guys in Hackerspace bought it. I actually bought it. The good news was because they could accept my PayPal account. Mm-hmm. So I was able to make a purchase, and they delivered it within 1 week.
Okay.
Yeah, and then and it fits perfectly. The GSM works, everything works, etc. It's quite ubiquitous in that view. So I know that if you do google.com/phone, you can actually make purchases. I think for Singapore markets, we are pretty friendly to Google self-made device, basically.
Right. I didn't really follow the announcements very much, other than, you know, I felt that the Google Plus thing was a bit interesting. Assuming their numbers are correct, right? I mean, it shows that you know, there could be a bit of interesting activity happening in Google Plus. Plus, I mean, they also demonstrated with the glasses thing and the whole Hangout thing, which I felt was very, very cool. So I mean, from Google positioning itself as a innovative tech company, I think they managed to position themselves quite nicely with the whole Google Glasses thing. So personally, I'm not really interested in the Nexus or the whole Android stuff, but the whole Glasses thing, you know, got me very excited.
Right. So will you buy one if it ever goes into the consumer space? I mean,
Not yet, yeah. Yeah, I'll probably, maybe if I'll play with it and all that, but definitely not use it regularly and buy one yet.
Yeah, you see, that's the question that I have. You see, I'm wondering whether who would actually buy those glasses. I mean...
Well, I mean, there's a whole industry of augmented reality companies out there who really, really need this thing to succeed.
You think so?
Yeah. Oh, for sure, right? I mean, how many augmented reality companies have you heard of getting funded in the last 3 years? There's dozens of them, I'm sure, but how many times have you actually used an augmented reality app, right? And I think part of the reason is because there's no real compelling reason to, and second, there's no simple interface for it, right? It's clumsy to take out your phone and then point it at an object and enable your camera and then wait for a combination of geotag and phone recognition to kick in and serve you up some, you know, tag data somewhere. And so, you know, you need something like glasses to really make it simple and convenient to the end user to get this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that's seriously very far away, but it's nice to see them really push the envelope on the innovation part. I mean, this at the end of the day, it's still a piece of glasses that you wear. It'll make you look different. But the fact that it could be applied, you know, in medical, in entertainment, in general, like social location information, like just makes it, this makes it really cool because it opens a whole lot of opportunities to many different things.
I think police and fire and rescue are some of the biggest potential users, actually.
Yeah, and I think that the nice thing is that the world and Google has presented it very much in a more like an entertainment cool factor. But I think there could be really some amazing real world applications for something like this. I mean, even in like what you pointed out, right? Medical, fire emergencies, and even in the military, which I think would be very exciting.
So we're getting towards a minority report world, I guess.
For sure.
Well, I think it's an interesting piece of gadget. So I'm presumably the is open to developers to make a purchase. What do you think the developer strategy, that they actually only sell the glasses to the developers first? Is it because they need to crowdsource ideas first, or
I guess they want developers to come and start building cool stuff on it first, right? Maybe hacking around with it, playing with it, and it's I guess similar to Apple releasing all their releases to developers first, as opposed to, you know, to others. And then I think developers are also generally friendlier to bugs and issues, so that will really help, you know, crank out all the problems before they really release it mass market.
Right. Any last thoughts from Jeremy on Google I/O?
To me, you know, the glasses are cute. The Nexus Q is a little bit more interesting because I think, as you said, that's real direct competition for something like the Amazon Kindle Fire. I think people are understanding that part of the challenge of the whole Android market is that there's too many hardware devices out there. And the way to really succeed is to do something that's a very, very deep and smooth integration of hardware plus the Android platform. So when you see things that are really directly done in partnership with Google and not just, you know, downloading the Android kit and putting it on your device, then that becomes a better thing. And then my last thought on it is kind of a follow-up to what Mohan mentioned. All the stuff around Google Plus and how they continue to push out some really interesting features around Hangouts and around APIs and integrations and all of that. They're really serious about giving us a go for it. I think that'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, I think they are not going in for a very short term type of thing. It seems that they're trying to control the environment as much as possible. Until to a certain point, then they will start really opening it up. But I think they still don't think that it's time to go and let the developers come in and roam free and open up the entire thing.
Well, what they've got, I mean, there are apps on Google Plus now, right?
Yep.
But it's you can't just sign up and create your own. You still have to be approved.
Yes, but you know, you've got companies like Flipboard and Zynga has already has like premium access, like mm-hmm. on games, on
content
as news, well. But yeah, they don't seem to. I think they really pick and select who to come onto the platform.
Yeah,
it's a great model, right? I mean, that way you get premium quality content and stuff coming in before all the trashy things come in and just ruin the whole experience, which is brilliant. Yeah,
it's kind of funny because in terms of Google Plus, they adopt a philosophical approach that's very counter to what they're doing.
Yeah, it's exactly the opposite of Android, right?
Yeah.
It's Google Plus takes the Apple App Store approach while Android takes kind of the free market.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that the Google is kind of like juggling in between like different juxtapositions towards different things and towards different companies as well.
But look, they're fighting on all fronts, right? And you can't say that about too many companies in the space right now. If you take Apple, for instance, they're not fighting a social network war and a mobile smartphone war.
Yeah.
They're just fighting on the smartphone and the tablet side. Google's doing tablets plus phones plus social network plus search plus software. I mean, man.
Which could also be Google's problem, right? I mean, there was an article or something about how Steve Jobs was telling was it Larry or one of the founders that the main problem with Google is just too many things happening at the same time, and the key is they don't seem to really be focusing on something. But then again, I think for us consumers, it's exciting, right? Because they're doing like so many cool new stuff, and though a lot of it is not really commercializable yet, but I think it's fun to watch.
Right, but I think in the last 1-2 years, Google tend to become more focused actually.
Yeah, they actually cleared up a lot of their stuff.
Yeah, they actually like throw off a lot of garbage and then now just focus on that few things and that few things alone. But it's just that they're opening a lot of war fronts. There was one announcement that there has been ongoing rumors that they haven't announced it yet. So I don't know, in the next 2 days, they're going to announce. One of them is that they're coming up with a competitor to Amazon Web Services.
Really? Well, they've got little bits of it already, right? They've got the Google App Engine and they've got Google Drive. And, you know, there's a few other services, I'm sure, that between all the APIs that they have and everything else. You know, you could probably string together a series of those things and come up with something that would be the beginnings of a competitor to AWS in ways.
But do you think that that would be a bit of a stretch for them? I mean, AWS. I mean, you have been formerly from AWS, you know.
Right.
The things behind building AWS is not that simple.
No way is it that simple. But you know, with that said, they've got pieces of what you might need if you were to go into that space, right? And some of those things are even in their DNA from going way, way back, right? You need the ability to operate at massive scale. I think, you know, it's pretty obvious that they've got that ability. And then you need, you know, the ability to execute on the software front. Mm. And I think with some of the apps that they've shown, can you think of an app that's more widely used than something like Gmail? I mean, the only thing would maybe be Facebook, right? And if you can serve software that has mission critical functionality across that big a market, you know, you've got some of the software capabilities that you need as well. Figuring out how to piece all those things together, I think, is a big challenge. And yeah, I don't know if they can or not, but I wouldn't write it off and say no way can Google compete.
Well, if they go to compete, they have a lot of people to fight off. They have AWS, they have Amazon, which is the largest market share. They have Microsoft. I don't know what's Azure's market share in that. Then they have all these, like, you know, Heroku's and, you know, how would they fend, it's a really quite entrenched market in terms of cloud.
I don't know if I'd agree with that, right? Because part of the things for cloud customers is that cloud customers are generally looking for convenience and price, right? And I think there's a lot of competition and room for competition in this space. And some of the things you mentioned, like something like a Heroku, is just a convenience layer. It's actually, I mean, it's not their own infrastructure. It's not their own service. It's mostly APIs and wrappers around other services. So to me, it's not at all clear that, you know, there's one runaway winner in this space yet. Of course, AWS is the most dominant, but I think there's a lot of room. I think, can still happen.
I think Google is clearly, you know, definitely competing in their space. It's just that they haven't really pushed that out as much as they've done with mobile and now the tablet and all the other sites. But they are definitely, you know, competing with Amazon and all the other cloud providers. So I wouldn't say that they are not competitors with them. I think they're very direct competitors. It's just that they haven't really focused on making that super apparent yet. You know, but if you go to our website, it's very, very clear that they compete directly with AWS and all these other cloud providers.
Right. Yeah. I guess now I'm going to move to the next point of discussion. We went through Microsoft, we went to Google, and now we go to Apple. All right? So
all right.
I know, Mohan, your guys broke the story about iTunes. You know, now we are allowed to buy movies, I think music from iTunes. I guess.
Yep.
The first point of thing is, I'm sure all of us have always wanted this, and now it's finally open to us. So what do you think from there?
Freaking amazing, right? I mean, like I think for the longest time, people have struggled with buying content from iTunes by either having to buy all the iTunes cards from the US. So it's fantastic to have all the content locally available and stuff like that. So I think it's one of those things that they finally did it. I just hope they made a bigger, stronger push for it. You know, I think they were a bit too quiet about the whole thing.
Right. You know that a lot of the R21s are all now censored on the iTunes Singapore just within the first day after some people went to buy it. I think it was reported in the I'm a Lion, sort of the Apple blog for South Singapore was saying.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
That was already like within the first day. They just all the R21 content just got taken off.
Well, that was going to happen sooner or later anyway, right?
Yeah, but they did it like immediately after someone made a complaint, and then, you know, MDA just went down on them very quickly.
Well, I mean, they had to, right? As soon as a complaint comes in, you have to take care of it, right? Because part of launching this is now you have to play by local government rules.
Yeah, but I think this is actually very interesting to me in the news in a very different way. So I guess the question is that, like, for example, all these big companies, Google, Amazon, Apple, and Microsoft, they're all fighting it out in the US, right? Mm-hmm. And the thing is that all these, while all their main markets are all in the US, most of the money made is there. But if you look at Apple, they seem to be doing everywhere. Like China, for example. China, from I was reading their annual report, was something like they account 16% of their revenues in China, just for Apple. Yeah, 16. And it's, okay. It's growing share. It's growing, actually. The numbers have been growing.
Yeah.
And then now you open this content strategy for them. I mean, Amazon is not open anywhere else other than the US. You see where I'm coming from? As in, Apple is kind of like getting more and more market share, mm-hmm. but they don't need to fight so much on technology. They just fight on getting the distribution side work mm-hmm. on that.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, well, I gotta admit on the iTunes, I wasn't nearly as excited because I don't really tend to buy any content off of iTunes. But I wonder, I mean, you know, how excited are you for this? Like, Mohan, do you see yourself now spending money on iTunes?
I think I don't usually buy albums and stuff like that, but I would definitely think that there will be instances where I would like a specific content, a movie or a song at that very moment. And just like how, you know, previously when you talk about apps, people never really thought that they'd be willing to just buy apps on the fly and stuff like that. And now people do it very often. So I think, you know, now that it's available, I'll definitely be consuming content a lot more.
Okay, fact, let me follow up on that. Mm. Are you going to be consuming local content, or are you going to be wanting to consume, let's say, like US, UK, Australia, foreign source content?
I think, okay, so I don't know how strong their local content offering is yet, but in terms of like indie music and stuff like that, right, once they have those kind of stuff being put up more regularly, I think I'll be keen on exploring a bit more local content, you know, stuff that isn't that easily available.
Because that's where I think what might be a really interesting opportunity, right, is, you know, if somebody like Apple manages to negotiate all of the international distribution rights through iTunes for, let's say, Bollywood or Hollywood content, that could be a massive opportunity for them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it seems that now they have a head start against the others, as in the Googles, the Microsofts, the Amazons.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether the other guys are actually looking outside. I mean, Asia is the biggest emerging market, but mm-hmm. the other guys may not be looking. And then they just basically make money all the way off from Asia, basically.
Yeah.
In fact, we got the second tip off we got was pretty interesting, because the guy was talking about the iTunes producer program, and he was saying how the producer program was starting to be available in places like India and all that where there's
what is various, the producer program?
It's
basically the whole idea is for local producers to be able to upload their own content onto iTunes. Apparently it started like about 2 months back. It was mostly available in like Eastern Europe, Latin America, and all that. So now it's slowly starting to be available in Asia. And this is where I think it's going to be really interesting, because a lot of the local content publishers and local guys will be uploading their own, you know, localized content, which is going to make the whole iTunes store like really, really amazing.
Yep. And also sort of a side note to it, well, even for us in the podcasting space, now they have created their own podcast app. They are actually, I think they, from looking at what they've been doing, they're going to allow a subscription to content as well. So mm-hmm. you can actually have localized podcast content for sale, basically.
Okay.
Yeah. So it looks like Apple has a game plan in terms of content as well, which is quite kind of something that I find it really interesting from that viewpoint. Any other last thoughts before we move on to other things?
Not too much.
Yeah, I want to take. You see, this is good because Apple has been very successful in China, right? Microsoft moderately to a certain level, and of course Google is in a mess in China. Yep. So I want to talk about the. There was a very interesting story from the Next Web that on the first day, the New York Times China Weibo account was deleted.
Yeah. It's tough, right? I mean, I think, you know, especially so many American companies still make the mistake of going in, and I don't want to use the expression guns blazing, but going in wholehearted because the market looks so big and appealing. And, you know, you've got something that's very successful. In this case, it's obviously world-leading content and a reputation for amazing journalism. And you go in and you don't really understand the market and you don't know the importance of kind of going in, you know, bit by bit, kind of inch by inch and learning how things work and where you can push and where you can't. And it just doesn't work, right? You get shot down so quick because you inadvertently said the wrong thing or offended the wrong person.
Yeah, I guess that's still going to be, this forever going to be a huge struggle for any foreign company wanting to do anything serious in China, right? But it's also a good wake-up call for anybody trying because then, you know, this kind of things clearly show that no matter how big you are, you still have to work with the rules, you still have to work with the regulation there, and you know, you have to plan your whole approach very carefully.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at it, you know, the iPhones in China, they have Weibo connection, they have QQ connection too, you know, they have all, they basically just throw away all the social networking services from the Western world and then they just integrated the Chinese ones.
Yeah. But apparently, based on the article on the Next Web, right, they were also saying that like Sina introduced new regulations for better control.
Yep.
So it also could be that, you know, that the New York Times actually did things the right way, but because of the new regulations, you know, things happened and the whole service got suspended.
Well,
so
the New York Times did a couple of investigative journalism pieces in China.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether there's the other pressure that, you know, they've been quite anti Chinese government, so maybe they just get a shutdown and say, you better shut this account down before they start spreading, you know, because I think the Chinese government is very afraid of people mobilizing.
Yeah.
So Weibo is apparently a very big source of mobilization. It was exactly that reason that the first generation of Weibo-like or Twitter-like clones have all died. And then Sina just said, we will do it, and we'll do it in a controlled environment that the government likes. And so they took the entire market.
But don't you think if someone like New York Times, if they had gone in there with, you know, with a more kind of cautious approach, going in and learning the rules of the game before they just go out and start firing off every story, you know, don't you think they could have avoided something like this? Because I'm pretty sure they could have made friends with Weibo beforehand and started to kind of get on that notice list for when new regulations are coming down and get the inside understanding on exactly how that stuff is supposed to work.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, if you don't invest the time in learning it, you just run the risk of getting shut down at a moment's notice.
But don't you think a company like the New York Times would have actually done that after looking at what happened to Google and stuff like that? I don't know. It doesn't seem very right for such a big media company to not, you know, do their homework and due diligence and relationship building properly.
Which let me thought of another question about how Facebook's going to go into China, because they are one of the issues that now about their stock prices is that whether they can find growth in new markets, and the only other market that they left apparently is China.
Yeah. But I mean, there have been rumors, right, that Zuckerberg has visited and has started to kind of check the place out. And I don't mean like check out China, but start to check out, you know, how the internet works there and start talking to the right people. So I think it's not a question of if, but a question of when and how. And, you know, if they're smart, they try to figure out the how before they try to do the when.
Right.
Yeah. I think I guess it's going to be pretty hard to for them to get in because there's quite a lot of social networking players there. I guess the number one and the number two are really quite even in numbers.
Who are the numbers one and two nowadays?
So number one is probably Renren. The number two is number one is QQ.
Okay.
Number two is Renren, and then three and four is Kaixin 001 and
right,
and then goes down to the 51s.com, etc. But I think now, I mean, QQ is more like a chat client and a games client.
Yeah, I was going to ask if they've really built out any of the additional features, like, you know, groups or feed news feeds or any of that. Okay,
but it's not so much in use as compared to RenRen. RenRen is still the default. I would consider it more closer to Facebook, basically, because they have applications, they have open, they also have platform access as well. But RenRen's share has been dropping, like all the other Chinese companies, so there's a growth problem for them as well. So the question is, if Facebook were to go in, I mean, some of these companies are state-owned too, so I don't know whether that would be they would make it extremely difficult for Facebook to even itch into the space itself.
Hey, but you said RenRen's share has been dropping. What's it been dropping to?
I don't have the offer. Actually, I need to go and check the finance.google.com.
No, but I mean, like, where are these users going if they're leaving RenRen?
No, they're not dropping. The share is dropping.
You said the share price.
Yeah, the share price is dropping.
My bad.
But the growth is still there. I mean, they still have user growth, etc. But I know part of the reason why they are having problems in terms of their share pricing going down is because they couldn't monetize. It's a very clear case of the Chinese internet companies. They went on a big traction share.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, let's go public and we'll figure out how to monetize. And that's what happened to them.
And CPMs are really low in China, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's the other problem too. That's why Youku and Tudou had to merge, right? Because they were both killing each other. So they said, let's just merge and we now have the total control of the video space. We can sell ads.
Yeah. And now they can set their own prices.
Yeah.
Don't they have the whole virtual goods model?
They do, but the virtual goods model is mainly, it's the most successful guys who have done it is QQ, Tencent. Mm, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, and Tencent actually, what they did was quite smart. They focus a lot on the prepaid card market, which the later players never came to really grasp with it.
Yeah, I remember in 2009, on my last trip to China, I remember seeing, like, prepaid QQ codes were being offered as incentives on products.
Yes.
Like, you know, it was buy Coke instead of Pepsi because on the Coke bottle, you get two QQ coins with this little code on the inside of the label.
That's right.
Yeah.
And people don't really understood how Tencent actually makes money. That's why year after year after year, their stock prices are okay, you know, stable. Either they're stabilized or growing. They don't have
right.
the problems of the rest of them, as we are seeing now. So I mean, credit to Tencent as a company. They've done a good job. Well, I guess I have two more stories. Well, I think we already hit around 40 minutes mark. Before that, I just sort of like to go and talk to our one of our sponsors, Audible, which is interestingly owned by Amazon. So I'm going to recommend a book today. It's a book by Yona Lehrer called How We Decide. It was an audio book that I was listening to. It's actually a book about this guy is actually documenting on some research they have done on how we decide things like ice creams, for example, what color ice creams. So there are a lot of these market research companies, etc. It tells you a lot about things like certain sales process, how do people move goods in different positions so that your visualization of the design of where you're in the supermarket is also is wired to your own processes of making decisions. So I thought that's a pretty good book. And actually, it was recommended by, I think, Jason Calacanis in one of his video casts as well, called This Week in Startups. I thought that was an interesting book that I...
What was the title again?
How We Decide.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yona Lehrer. Yeah. So if you want to, for our readers, you can go to audible.com/TWIA, put in our promo code, and you can get 2 credits for free for the first 30 days. You can download your first Audible piece, and then you can, if you don't want to, you can cancel the subscription, but, you know, that particular file is still free. Yeah.
Cool.
Well, I just have 2 more stories left, so let's get back to it. And the first one, I think we know the company, Mohan, dropped my site.
Yep.
By a company called Orbit Flies. Mm-hmm. Orbit Files, sorry. Files,
yeah.
Yeah, to boost its user base and focus on North America. I mean, you have dealt with the company. You know, I mean, we all know John Farron. What do you think? What's your view on that?
I think that's a very interesting and bold step for them. You know, the thing is they're not really acquiring the talent there, so they won't really have a US office. But I think it's a bold step forward, and you know, John is a pretty smart guy, so I'm looking at him very clearly to see what he's doing next.
Right. So you reckon that step would allow them to kick into the US market?
Yeah, I guess the. Their main, I won't say issue, but so far most of the users are from India and this region, right? So I think they need to have a stronger foothold in the US. And I know John was also, like, you know, for a period of time traveling to the States to potentially look at investments and stuff like that. So if they really want to grow the company's value in that side of the world, I guess, you know, this is one of the ways for them to do it.
Mm. Yeah, I guess it's going to be interesting for them to sort of how much the user base is going to boost. I think he has some numbers in mind the last I spoke to him in terms of how much is considered traction before the investors will really put the money into the company.
Mm-hmm.
From that. I mean, so far so good. I think they're reaching their first million already, right?
Yeah. I think what John has done really well also is to hire, like, very smart, you know, people. He's managed to poach people from Yahoo and Google and all that. So I mean, clearly, you know, there must be a solid vision that he's selling to these guys. And so I think that's one of the best things he's probably doing right now.
Let's hope we get some good fun. Well, the last one is the online game. Well, my last story is about online gaming. Ah, too bad. Sakan is not in today.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. He would be the person to tell me what is going on. It's an online gaming giant company called Nexon. They have acquired InBlue, which is a social mobile games for GREE and Mobile Game Town. Mobile game platform. So I don't know about Nexon. So anyone?
Nexon's really big. I mean, they're one of the two kind of largest traditional Korean online game companies, NCSoft being the other. And
okay,
there's probably somebody I'm forgetting as well. But to me, what's most interesting about this is, you know, in the past, I think you've seen a lot of kind of rivalry between Japanese gaming companies and Korean gaming companies. Yep. And I mean, seeing now an acquisition and going in the direction that's probably opposite to what a lot of people would expect. A lot of people would expect that it's the Japanese company acquiring the Korean company. But, you know, here it's the opposite. And then, you know, the other thing about...
Yep, sorry. Jeremy?
Thing might have cut off a bit.
Moving into mobile games or social mobile games shows that I think, you know, the whole landscape of online games is really shifting dramatically. I wouldn't be too surprised if you start seeing in coming years that, you know, even things like, I don't want to suggest that StarCraft or World of Warcraft would kind of be forced to move mobile. But actually, I mean, you're seeing already with Zynga more and more, they're having to release, you know, Farmville mobile apps and Zynga Poker mobile apps and so on. So the whole space, you know, it's really shifting dramatically.
But don't you think that gaming space is a little bit like a Hollywood movie? You either get it or you don't. I mean, Rovio takes like 39 guesses and then the last one got it true.
Well, yeah.
It is a hit-driven industry, right, at the end of the day. I mean, that doesn't just revolve around mobile. Mobile gaming revolves around pretty much every gaming space, right, even in the console or PC.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess just, you know, entertainment in general is just very hit-driven, right? If you get it, you get it.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yes, I sort of forgot one thing about the Apple story just now. So this is my one last thing before I get into events. I thought one of the things that allowing these content distributions happen is because of the rumored Apple TV, the real Apple TV that's coming.
Interesting.
Okay.
So not the little box that we have nowadays that basically just Splatoon's content.
Yes. And there is an event coming up, I don't know, it's this week or next week, where they are going to have an event with developers on the iOS TV. Rumored heavily to be for developers is iOS, but for TV.
Hmm.
So I don't know whether they're going to announce the TV soon. etc. But I mean, with all these deals, doesn't it make it feel bad that you can now buy a TV with Apple on it?
Well, I have a question for you guys, right? Would you guys actually, I mean, not considering what an Apple TV is like, but would you guys seriously consider buying an Apple TV?
The answer is yes for me.
Definitely for you. What about you, Jeremy?
I mean, I'd probably wait a while and see what it really features, because I tend to get most of my content online nowadays from different stores, not so much from the iTunes store. I buy off of Amazon and other places for content that I want.
Yep.
And I stream from a lot of different channels, because I also stream content from the BBC and from Finland. And, you know, one thing that I've really never seen in any solution is something that can provide me all of the different media sources that I want. So, and my guess is an Apple TV is, just like all other Apple channels, is going to be very controlled by Apple. So I seriously doubt that it would provide for me the things that I want.
No,
so
but if they
probably
allow,
be pretty cautious.
Right, but if they allow the apps on, there is one app that actually allows you to access to all channels.
Yeah, okay. Then yeah. That probably makes me look at it at least.
Yeah, because I know because Sawmill does use one of those apps to do that. And actually you pay a subscription to the in the US basically to get access. Then you can get BBC content, you can get even like, you know, like for him is cricket, India cricket matches, etc. Or even Premier League as well.
What is that?
I couldn't remember the name, but I probably have to check in with him because he always shows whenever a guest goes to his place, he used this app basically for Mac OS X. But I know that there is he showed me that there's an iPad version of it. Basically,
yeah, I want to know what this app is too.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure Apple will nail the whole TV thing, right?
Yeah, and then the app will get thrown out of the app store. Suddenly, you don't know what happened. No, but I know of a Chinese one. It's called PPS, which is the reason how I got my parents addicted to an iPad. So it's for the Chinese TV drama series. Okay, so there was an app that actually goes through all channels, and I actually took it and I taught my parents, and they absolutely now glued to the iPad.
Interesting.
Yeah, I taught them how to serve, how to input characters, but that was the killer video.
There you go.
I mean, in fact, yeah, that was the same killer for my dad. He watches YouTube. Yeah, he serves YouTube videos on the iPad all the time.
Have you asked him to check out Spoo yet?
No. He actually doesn't watch movies, but he checks out more like music videos and songs and you know, snippets of some, you know, stuff that he likes to check out. Like, so yeah. He actually uses YouTube on his iPad a lot. Wow. And that was the thing that got him to pick up the iPad and then use it heavily.
Really? So video is the in thing now then.
Yeah. And for my mom, clearly it was games, right? You know, Bejeweled and everything.
Really?
Else. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, my mom is like, she doesn't touch any device, but the moment the iPad came out, very quickly picked it up, downloaded a few games, and she's just hooked onto it.
It even happens for one of my friends who had an autistic kid. He picked up the iPad and knew how to use it, and that's the communication channel now for him.
Nice.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah, I mean, when Apple showed those videos about it, I didn't believe until someone actually tells me that actually helped them, basically. So, okay, we're going to be closing. Before that, I wanted to know, any events happening this or next week?
I don't have anything on my radar.
TEDx KL, right? That's happening soon, right?
Yeah, well, it's already way over already. So now Daniel is in TED Global.
Oh, okay.
As one of the fellows, actually. He got the Bill and Melinda Gates, you know, scholarship to get there.
Nice.
Yeah, so I wish, cool. And then I'll give a plug for him so that, you know, we're all proud of him.
Yeah,
well done.
Yeah,
for sure.
There's an event that's coming up next week is by Startup Roots. It's about which platform would you want to pick. It's happening in Hackerspace Singapore. I don't have anything on the regional site, but I know that IBM Smarter Cities Summit is going to be happening in Singapore.
Okay. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just to help Rama plug something as well, right? Sparks Up events coming up.
Oh, yes,
in October.
Correct.
Yeah, they haven't. I don't think they've launched a site yet, but he said he's going to do that really soon. So, you know, Agreed. That's something to look out for as well.
Correct. So SparkSub is going to be back in October. Are you going this time around?
Yeah, I'm actually planning to go.
There's also another event happening in October. It's organized, I think, by Vini, PhilCon for Asia.
Oh, yeah. That's in conjunction with Tech Venture, right, or something?
Yes, correct. So Tech Venture will be happening around that time as well, basically.
Yep, yep.
Okay, so we got our events this week done. Well,
hi, this is Daniel, editing the show. Just a correction, TEDx KL is actually happening on 14th of July. And you can get the info at www.tedxkl.com. Resuming episode.
Where can we find you, Mohan?
I'm on Facebook, Mohan Balani, Twitter, Mohan Balani, yep. And just email Mohan at e27.sg.
How about the e27 with your face on it too? e27sg, sorry. The Twitter account, right?
Yep.
Yep. How about you, Jeremy?
Best place to get me nowadays on Twitter is at SharingEngine or at thesharingengine.com.
Hey, I forgot about this. Just the last question to you both. Your one last thing. Any startups that you've seen this week that's interesting? One startup from each one of you?
You both, Jeremy. Yeah.
All right. I saw them a little more than a week ago, but I think it's pretty cool. I mean, I work in the sharing economy space, so I always look out for stuff that's pretty cool. A startup out of Japan called Nokisaki. And it's basically a peer-to-peer rental system for very small unused spaces. It could be anything from like a 1 square meter patch of sidewalk out front of your house that you have the rights to that you could rent out to somebody to set up a little, sidewalk flower stall or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. Nokisaki.com.
How do you spell it?
Nokisaki.com.
Okay. Nokisaki.
Yep. It's all in Japanese, but I met the guys at an event in Tokyo about a month and a half ago, and I just thought it was really cool because, you know, a lot of the other sharing economy type stuff is pretty difficult there. Like, say, something like Airbnb just doesn't work because people don't have spare bedrooms in Japan. Mm. But they looked at, you know, what there is a demand for and what there is supply for, and they put together this marketplace. So that was pretty cool.
Cool. How about you?
I mean, my favorite still has to be, Bulk, BUILK, the Thai company that won the Echelon 2012 pitch. Uh-huh. And I think it's just fascinating how, these guys managed to, build a really cool product for a very traditional industry and are already, generating revenue from it. So they're still my favorites.
Right.
Yeah, big props to them.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool. So I'm going to wrap it up here. So you can all...
Hey, Bernard, how about you? What's your startup recommendation?
My startup recommendation? I actually did have one in my mind. Actually, pivoted. It's Game Marquee.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's done by this young entrepreneur in called Keith. They recently changed the app. So now they other than doing their own app, with doing sort of rewards based on gamification. I think they did one for E27's Echelon event, I think. So you need to do 5 things in the Echelon event, like taking a picture of yourself with a startup or whatever, and then you get rewards on top of it. So they have actually pivoted and redo the entire app, and now they also white label their solutions as well. Yeah. So I think, I'm sort of trying to... I thought that was the one that I actually have on my list.
I mean, kudos to Keith, man. He's been really, working hard at Game Marquee and he's been pushing it for the longest time. So
yes, and respect. And he's gone through some investor issues, which I can't talk about, but, he has really gone through the fire and get this back in peace. So I thought maybe I want to help him to spread the word.
Cool, good on him.
Yeah. So, if you all want to find me, just Google me at Bernard Leung. I'll be starting a new job next week. So, you can always find me at BLeungCW. But if you want to check out This Week in Asia, we can find us at twitter.com/ThisWeekInAsia. And you can subscribe to our iTunes, This Week in Asia, or Facebook and like us as This Week in Asia. So, we always love your contribution and feedback and let us know. And so we'll see you next week. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.